Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I'm delighted to welcome. Well, actually, he'd be in Mahoney back in Ireland, and indeed his ancestors were all Mahoneys. But then when they came here, they wanted to make it a little bit classier and call it Mahoney. But Ryan Mahoney, you're very welcome to the program.
Well, Adrian, it's always a pleasure, and I don't know if it's classier or lazier, but yeah, it was Mahoney, and we went with the Mahoney. So it was that nice northern New York twang.
First of all, I would like to congratulate you on a new position that indeed will be very close to our own hearts here, as you're about to take over the top slot at Quinnipiac University, Ireland's Great Hunger Museum. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you very much, and I'm really excited to join the team there with Claire, Neve, Margaret, Kate, Lynn, John. Everyone there has done a remarkable job getting that place going, and we'll just lead it into the future here, and I think we've got some remarkable plans heading forth.
Yes, I'm sure. But I did want to get you on this program before you left your current position. And
yep.
You are the executive director of the Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany. And if you do half as good a job when you land in Quinnipiac as you have there, I think it's going to be fantastic. First of all, congratulations. I think that every person who has, commented on what you have accomplished in the Irish American Museum, know that it has grown tremendously, and you're leaving there, and you're leaving the museum in tremendous shape. But maybe, Ryan, you might give us a little bit of the history of the Irish American Heritage Museum.
Absolutely. So the museum was originally founded in 1986 by the New York State American Irish Legislators Society. And it was founded and located down in East Durham, New York, so right in the middle of the Irish Alps, in the middle of the Catskill Mountains. And it was opened as a seasonal facility for years and years. So about 7 years ago, the board got together and realized to really fulfill the educational mission, they had to be open year-round and had to be closer to a population center. So they decided to move it to downtown Albany. And in just the last 4 years, we've seen membership rise over 900%, our visitations out of this world. We have programs going on every single week, ranging from Irish cooking classes to dance to music to historic lectures to films. You name it, if it has something to do with Irish history and culture, we do it here. We've really turned this institution into a living, breathing part of the Irish community, part of the arts community, and it's growing both locally and nationally.
You have a couple of unique distinctions, not the least of which is that, your museum has had an exhibition in Ireland. You might tell us about that.
Yeah, it was an exhibit focused on a collection of Dublin photographs from 1963, and it was countered with some modern-day photographs. It was called Dublin Then and Now, and it was at the National Library over in Dublin. And so that was one of our traveling exhibits that goes out throughout both the United States and internationally. Most recently, we just had our exhibit focusing on the women's role in the 1916 Rising go out to Hawaii, actually. So our exhibits are still traveling nationally and internationally, and it's something we're very proud of.
What does it entail to bring exhibits on the road, so to speak?
So it's a different kind of philosophy, if you will. We're really looking to not only increase attendance here through our doors, but also increase knowledge about what we do here at the museum. So while some places use their traveling exhibits strictly to bring in money, we do it to increase knowledge about the Irish American community, also increase knowledge about the museum. So included in this often is shipping expenses, usage fees. and making sure you can find institutions that can help share your message. And that's always probably the most important thing. You don't want something just to go up and be hidden from view.
Yeah. Now, just on the technical point, when you bring exhibits on the road, and when you bring them to different locations, whether that's to Ireland or across the United States, how does that then affect your overall collection?
Well, again, it depends on the exhibition. What we're lucky enough here at the museum is we try to switch out what we have on display about every 18 weeks. So there's always something fresh up and something new up. And so we don't try to keep the same thing up all the time. So it doesn't generally affect our presentation of Irish American history at the museum too much because we're generally onto something new after that. And we're lucky enough, like I said, to rotate things in and out all the time.
What level of interest is there, say, recently in Irish genealogy?
That's probably our most successful programming aspect. Every single week we have someone, actually multiple people, come in here and talk about how they just had their DNA done or how they just found out something crazy with Ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. We have a resident genealogist on staff here, Lisa Doherty, who is probably one of the top Irish genealogists in upstate New York. And she has just gone gangbusters with the programming offer here and her open sessions. There is every month a bigger and bigger increased interest in this topic.
The museum and, in fact, your board, previous board, and your newly established board there had more than a passing interest in requiring instruction in New York State public schools about the Irish famine from 1845 to 1852. It played its own role in there. Sometimes we think that this was just our corner here in New York. And if I started naming the participants here, I'd definitely leave somebody out. But also, New York State public schools are the beneficiary of, indeed, the involvement of the Irish American Heritage Museum.
Absolutely. So we do a number of school programs, both on-site and actually off-site at schools, whether it's bringing in musicians, bringing in artists. We actually, a couple years ago, were lucky enough to bring Consul General Noel Kilkenny to Shenandoah High School, where he got to see their whole Irish arts program and got to spend the whole day with them. So we love to give kids that opportunity to learn about the Irish story. Now, what we do here at the museum is essentially use this Irish immigrant story as a case study. So we're able to correlate what happens with the Irish American population with, you know, what happens with the Italian population, what happens with modern day immigrants, to make sure that people understand that this story is still relevant today.
In the museum, and this becomes very important to people, it is a permanently chartered 501c3 nonprofit. With an educational mission, and that does attract a great number, not only of corporate sponsors, and God knows you've the slew of them, but it also gives people an opportunity to, to contribute to the work that you are doing. What role does personal, relatively smaller donations play in your overall program?
So that's really where our strength has been the last couple of years. As I mentioned before, our membership has risen over 900% in the last 4 years. And that's allowed us to really really explore a whole new area of programs. Where before maybe we could only hold one or two genealogy programs a year, you know, now we're holding 20 to 25 different genealogy programs. We're holding maybe 50 to 60 different public programs throughout the year. And that's all because of the small $15 donations here, 25 there, 45 there. That really makes the biggest chunk of our donations throughout the year.
You have Among your collections there, you might talk a little bit about the virtual exhibits.
Yeah, and this is something that we're really looking to expand. But we've done a number of art exhibits that we like to showcase online as well. About 2 years ago, the museum was lucky enough to put together an exhibit on the artwork of Michael Augustine Power O'Malley. He was an early 20th century Irish-born artist, ended up living in America, actually ended up painting a bunch of backdrops for Hollywood productions. But for the first time in history, we had over 50 of his original pieces of art on display in one place. Now, a number of those pieces are on display now on our virtual exhibits online. And that continues on with other art exhibits. For example, Kevin McCrell, who's better known as a musician,
yes,
but is a fantastic painter in his own right. And what we're looking to do is create more interactive online exhibits. The museum is going to be rolling out a brand new website here in the next month. And over time, especially with our new strategic plan, the goal is to make these interactive exhibits where students can really dive into what is Irish American culture and history.
How, on your photo albums, how did you acquire those?
The paintings and the photos?
The photos, yeah.
Yeah, so those were donated. We have the rights for the photo albums. I believe one of the photo albums on there is the Dublin 1963 album. And that would be going through the work, going back to the original chairman of the board, Joe Dolan, all the way up through to Ed Collins into modern day. But we have a great team of volunteers that's out there 24/7, really pushing the mission of the museum.
That brings us to, of course, one of your greatest and most popular exhibitions, the Paul O'Dwyer Library. And we've, and many people, you know, many visitors have indeed marveled at that it plays a significant role in your overall, in the museum there.
Yeah, so the library is probably one of our crown jewels here at the museum, and it's something that grows every month. Actually, just this past year, we received two donations that included over 300 books each that we didn't already have. And this library really runs the gamut from everything and anything you can imagine with Irish American history, culture, heritage, literature. It's an amazing collection, and it started off as part of Paul's original personal collection, and it's just been built on since. And it's something that we're really growing. It's part of the National Interlibrary Loan, so these books travel all over the country. And eventually it's going to be a perk for members where they can do a direct loan right out of our library here on site.
Indeed, you have the family connection there as well, Deirdre O'Dwyer Ladd, who...
She's fantastic.
Yes, and I'm sure she'll keep an eye not only on that, but has, and her father, Billy, before her, William, board member. It is, and it has been, one might say, for the hub and the capital of New York State, it couldn't be more conveniently located.
Absolutely.
And that was a great stroke, you know, to get that space, actually.
Being in the crossroads of New York, Boston, Montreal, and then just heading out on the thruway to Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo, it's worked really well for us, and it's allowed us to build a greater number of partnerships than I think our board ever thought possible. So we're out in Rochester all the time doing lectures or going out to Syracuse or even heading down to the city. You know, we always have that opportunity because we really are centrally located.
The your parking is quite good there.
There's usually never an issue, especially with Albany being mostly a commuter city, if you will. So when we have all of our programs at night or on the weekends, there's always plenty of parking.
Also, you have, and we should give your website, because you do have a monthly newsletter, and that contains, among other things, a lot of Irish-American tidbits and some, you know, a good calendar of events and upcoming events. What is your website?
Yeah, it's easy to remember. It's irish-us.org. And as I mentioned, we're rolling out a brand new website here in the, probably about the next 2 weeks. So we're doing a complete redesign of it, and the goal is to make it, as I said, much more interactive. But if you go on our current website, not only will you find a virtual exhibit, you'll find some great archival pieces. One of our board members, Dr. Margaret Carroll, has put together this fantastic series called 16 on 16, where she took local stories, local family connections, to basically the Irish independence movement. And so she gets the whole story, gets a couple of video snippets there, and it's really, really driven an audience, a new audience, to our website.
And you are, and the museum is a member of the North American Reciprocal Museum Association.
Absolutely. So if you join the museum at a membership level of $100 or more, you get free entry into over 900 museums in North America.
That's pretty good. Again.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal.
No, and that's not $100 a year. That's a $100 membership, right? Initial membership.
Our memberships run yearly, so they usually go from when you sign up. So if you sign up in March, it'll run to the following March.
Again, I know you're going to be very welcome as you take over a particularly exciting year ahead for Quinnipiac University's Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, where their own exhibition will be heading for Ireland next spring, and will be featured in Dublin and Skibbereen or whatever. But today,
yeah, we're very excited about that.
But today, I did want to again call you to fill us in on, on the Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany, and to, you know, to say that you've done a great job with it, and thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate it, and I really appreciate all your support over the last few years. It really means a ton to not only myself and our board, but the whole Irish community here. Your radio network and you personally have done a great job preserving Irish history and culture here in America.
Thank you, Ryan. Ryan Mahoney, friends, who is the executive director of the Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany, and you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.